Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Desitel. And now we're going to have questions for 5 minutes. First, I'd like to recognize the chairman, Mr. Westerman.
Thank you, Chairman Tiffany, and thank you to the panel. Great testimony. I appreciate everybody's input, and hopefully we can continue to work together as we develop the language to file the bill. And I'm just going to try to go down the row as quickly as I can. Ms. Downey, you talked about mechanical thinning and prescribed burns. And, you know, we've heard it said a picture's worth 1,000 words. And I have a picture behind me that I think is worth 10,000 words. This is from the Bootleg Fire in Oregon. And we see an area that was thinned but not burned, destroyed in the wildfire. We see an area that had no treatment that was really destroyed in the wildfire. And then there's this green band in the middle that it was thinned and burned. Can you just elaborate a little bit on the need not just to do prescribed burns, not just to thin, but to use those in combination as a treatment?
Chairman Westerman, thank you. And I agree that the image you have from the Bootleg Fire highlights the power of combining those different tools. That example really highlights it, and I think the science also continues to highlight that as well. I mentioned in my testimony the new meta-analysis that looks at when you're able to combine those tools of mechanical thinning and prescribed burns, that's when you're able to really see that reduced risk of wildfire and the reduced severity going forward. So when you're able to combine those tools and use both of them in tandem and responsibly, you can have some really incredible benefits.
Thank you. Mr. Parma, you bring a unique perspective coming from the private sector and a mill owner. On the business side, what is the largest cost in your business?
Largest cost in our business is the fiber, actually. The trees and that we use, that's where most of our cost comes from.
But if you look at the inputs in your business, are not the log cost the highest, the resource cost? That's more than the labor cost, the electricity. Typically, that's how it is in a mill environment. And the reason I'm asking that question is, if you wanted to expand your operation, what is the number one thing you have to be sure of if you're going to invest capital in an operation producing wood products?
Yeah, again, it gets back to fiber, to the actual trees. If there's trees available that we can harvest, that we can use to make product, that's where we'll probably put another plant.
Right, and it would be foolish to build a mill and expand your production capacity if you didn't have the fiber to go into it. That's just common sense. Yet, we've seen a loss of infrastructure in the West, and we know how critical it is to be able to have a market for this material that needs to be thinned. So, hopefully we can do more with the stewardship contracting, and we can encourage mill owners to have confidence that they can invest their capacity or expand their capacity and know that supply is going to be there. And if you look at the U.S. market, we still get about a third, a little less than a third of our wood products from Canada, yet we see millions of acres of assets burn up every year that could be creating jobs in rural areas and adding to the U.S. economy and hopefully lowering prices for building homes and other things. Dr. Barrett, you said several great things. You talked about being proactive. I've said that so many times in this committee. I also add, we've got to be pragmatic. And you talked about building wildfire-resilient communities, talking about hardening infrastructure, which I totally agree with that. But can we, in a sense, harden the forest as well? I know programs like FireWise are focused on making structures that aren't going to catch on fire, but in a sense, could we harden the forest to wildfire so that they look like this strip in the middle versus the other ones?
Thank you for that question, Chairman. We can. I think what's important, though, is that in as much as we harden the forest, we complement that with hardening the communities that are most threatened as well, previous to that picture, you had a picture of a home burning. And I can tell you there's about a 90% chance that home ignited from an ember. Once that ember lands in the home and starts to ignite it, burning it, then neighboring structures are threatened, and it is no longer a forest problem. It is a structural ignition problem, and that requires a different set of expertise and a different set of mitigation measures.
I agree 100%. We had a chance to, we were coming back from a CODEL last year after the fire in Lahana, and we went over and toured the damage. You know, it was a grass fire, that then it became a structure fire, and then it became a massive structure fire. We saw glass melted out of automobiles, aluminum, magnesium. If it wasn't steel, it was pretty much melted. And, you know, it takes 2,000 degrees to melt glass. So an unbelievable high-intensity wildfire once it got into structures. So I'm all for hardening structures. And in that wildland urban interface, we've got to do a much better job of both with forest management and the structures. Mr. Desitel, I had the great opportunity to go travel around with you on Colville land, and you know, my hat's off to you for the work that you all are doing in a very difficult situation. And you pointed out, we visited that site where you, the Colville, had done everything right as far as a forest management standpoint, but you had a wildfire come in from the Forest Service that took out, you know, you had the green strip here that still got destroyed because the fire was so hot. We're trying to give more authorities to tribes to do what you do best, and that's to manage your lands, to go out on the federal estate and do management. How eager would Colville be to manage the lands that adjoin your forest so that you could keep those federal fires from coming in on your land?
So Colville would be a very willing partner in that. We have two Tribal Forest Protection Act projects that are on projects adjacent to the Colville. Again, one held up in litigation, the other one working through the process, hoping to see a NEPA decision on that very soon that does not get litigated, but recognize that in the example that we saw, that if you don't do things at scale, it's really kind of anecdotal, that when you look at treatment across the landscape, it has to be large enough that when you have those high-intensity fire events, largely driven by wind, that they will withstand or have lower fire severities when those fires hit. So I think it's critical that we do work on both sides of the fences and working with our neighbors, whether those be the Forest Service, BLM, or private, are absolutely critical to really trying to get a handle on this wildfire crisis.
And you made a great point about making sure the tribes have the same authorities that the federal land managers have when it comes to categorical exclusions and NEPA, and that's well noted. Appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Gentleman yields. Now recognize Mr. Benz from Oregon for 5 minutes.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, and I'm going to be asking questions about the content of the bill, so if it turns out that the person I asked the question of doesn't know anything about it, feel free to select one of your fellow folks and point at them, and we'll go there. So we'll start with you, Mr. DeSantel, and I'm curious, the watershed space is of great interest to me, and the value of the forest in acting as a sponge to take up water and then release it over time is far more important, perhaps, than it's ever been. I have the privilege of being chair of the Water, Wildlife, Fisheries Subcommittee of Natural Resources, and of course, water is everything to fish. And not to mention agriculture, and not to mention all of the other folks that rely upon the water as it comes down from forests. So my question to you is, this bill suggests that we would be able to use watersheds as a foundation for asking for more alacrity and trying to protect our forests. Do you agree?
Yes, I do agree. For one, that watersheds are just an appropriate scale to look at treatments and a way to prioritize, but completely agree with you from a water priority perspective, too, that when you look at tribes, for the vast majority, if not all tribes, water is one of the most sacred and critical things that they try to protect from a natural resource perspective.
Ms. Downey, I had occasion to stop by the University of California at Davis 3 weeks ago and speak with a water expert there, and she was talking about the ever-increasing dryness of our forests. And this, the conversation came up in an interesting way. I was asking about the impact of warmer weather upon the farmland out across the Central Valley of California. And she was explaining, of course, the obvious, which is it gets hotter, more water is drawn out of the soil, turns into vapor, leaving the salt. So we were talking about salt. But in the course of the conversation, she mentioned that forests were suffering the same consequence of this evaporative loss of water as things got warmer, thus resulting in much drier forests. Is that your opinion also? I'm assuming everybody on the panel agrees with that consequence of hotter, warmer, drier climate.
Congressman, I can't speak too much to the actual water tables there. That's a little bit outside my scope, but I would absolutely agree that hotter, drier conditions are a factor fueling our wildfire crisis. And your point on the connection with water, I mean, so many of our watersheds, especially in the West, are reliant on those healthy forest ecosystems. Where I am in Bozeman, Montana, if a fire were to rip through the forests surrounding our community, we'd be out of water in 3 days. And so the interconnection of water and the health of our forests cannot be overstated.
And so the question would be, do the people in Bozeman actually understand that getting back into the woods is a requirement of maintaining the water that they get from their tap? Do they get it? Does the greater population understand how close they are to not having water?
That is a great question, and I would like to credit like the Forest Service and the City of Bozeman and a lot of local collaboratives in helping to make that point. So I do think there's a strong effort there to emphasize that connection. I'll also recognize that PERC, where I work, we've been really lucky to be working on a film looking at just defining what is a healthy forest. Why should the general population care about not just having these dense, overstocked forests, but instead well-managed and restored ecosystems for exactly the reasons you're discussing, because they have real implications for those of us who live there every day.
To me, it seems that I think Newt Gingrich said that the way you get the law changed, you change public opinion. So the real question is, how are you and others letting people know of the need for a bill just like the one that Chair Westerman is bringing that builds and responds to the incredible danger, almost existential, for some of our cities? I mean, obviously it is. How do you guys get the word out? How do you tell people about this?
It is a big challenge, but one that I know we're eager to take on, and I know many of the other panelists here are also working on similar issues of how do we start to change that public opinion? How do we start to change the messaging that when you step off the plane in a Western community and see these dense green forests, we have to recognize there's also a risk there. And so I think there's a lot of work that can be done, but I know that is something that we are eagerly taking on and working to communicate.
Well, I appreciate that. Yield back.
The gentleman yields, and I'm going to take a couple minutes to ask some questions here. Mr. Parma, so the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, you guys put out some good data, it appears, quarterly, and are you familiar with that? That's coming out of your organization. We receive it in regards to harvest on federal lands, in particular U.S. Forest Service lands.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing from the data that in terms of net nationally, there actually is not an increase in the amount of timber coming off from the U.S. Forest Service lands. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is.
And do you guys have a reason or two, a prominent reason or two, to attribute that to? Because, you know, I think about the additional money that has been put in, and yet we're not seeing an additional harvest. What are the reasons for it?
Yeah, I would go back to good neighbor authority, stewardship. All of those are opportunities that aren't quite being used, I think, to their full ability. Both products like that would also help increase the amount of timber.
What was that last point again?
The good neighbor authority and stewardship contracting.
So if we would do more of that.
Yeah, there's a fix that needs to be done in a good neighbor authority. There's five or six states that do a good job of it now. There's more that would like to do it. But as we all know, when it comes to national forests, state land, county land, everything's checkerboard anymore. It's not, especially as you go east from the Rockies and that, it's hard to do management on just one ownership. Where they're allowed to have, like I said, with that good neighbor authority fix, if we get that, we'll get more opportunity that way.
Yeah, I know I heard the example was about a decade ago that the golden-winged warbler was being considered for being put on the endangered species list. And it turns out its habitat is early successional forests. Yep. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is.
And so you think about these U.S. Forest Service lands that are not being managed, we're actually creating or have the potential to create an endangered species as a result of that.
Right, and we have the data that proves that, you know, we're not, according to the plans that we have for the Lake States area in particular, where the golden-winged warbler habitat is, they're not meeting their young forest objectives. So we're losing opportunity there to actually improve habitat for another species by doing timber harvest.
Mr. Desitel, so the cottonwood fix is in the discussion draft. Do you think that's a good thing?
Yes, anything that speeds up process, limits the risk of litigation is a good thing to work at the pace and scale we need to. I think it's been mentioned by even Deputy Chief French before that process, I think, is a bit of a problem for us, and particularly when we look at the rate of change in the number of acres impacted annually by wildfires. We're definitely seeing wildfire as the managing or the largest managing factor on the landscape compared to the things that we're doing as human beings.
Have you specifically seen cottonwood litigation affect your operations?
Well, we had a project litigated. I'm not sure how close in comparison it was to the cottonwood litigation, but it was opposition of a project that we had proposed, I think largely because of its potential implications to a designated roadless area and its eligibility for wilderness. But I do know that our intentions in treating that were to give us opportunities to suppress fire were we to get one in that location. And unfortunately, while that was being litigated, we had a very large fire season in 2021 that burned 50,000 acres on the reservation just south of where that project was to be completed. Fortunately, we got it held on the reservation side, so it didn't end up on the Forest Service, but I think it demonstrates the potential that's there if you don't do that work. And unfortunately, we hadn't done enough work even on our side of the border to stop that once it got to that drainage that we had planned the activities for.
So the Intertribal Timber Council supports doing something in regards to cottonwood to get a fix to it?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, it's always dependent on the language, but definitely supportive of things that help process.
Yeah. So is it the case that at times the Forest Service is not a good neighbor?
The Forest Service could be a better neighbor in scenarios. I'm thankful that the Coville National Forest, which is on our northern boundary, is one of the more active forests in the country, but the Okanagan Natchee struggles with different demographics and they definitely do less treatment, than what the Coville does. So there's definitely room for improvement.
Because most of the U.S. Forest Service lands in Wisconsin are in my district up in northern Wisconsin. And I've heard that from county forests, state foresters, private. There's a lot of private forest land in Wisconsin that at times, because of the lack of harvest and you end up with disease and insect infestations, that they really become a problem for their neighbors. And so it is of great concern. Ms. Downey, we heard with our previous panel in regards to and maybe double the cost to be able to get a project done as a result of litigation. Have you seen that? Has your organization, PERC, seen examples of something like that?
Thank you, Congressman. Yes, litigation is a major challenge. You brought up the cottonwood fix, and the national forest surrounding Bozeman, where I live, is ground zero for that cottonwood decision. And what we saw, again, is this is the forest that is our watershed. If this forest goes up in flames, we're out of water in 3 days. That project was collaboratively designed. There was a lot of community buy-in on that, and that was litigated. Over 15 years went by when that was all tangled up. And at the end of the day, the litigation finally was resolved. Work has now started, litigation is still continued, but work has been allowed to go on. And the project is moving forward exactly as it was originally laid out. All of those years of delay and costs and time and everything where our community was at risk didn't end up actually changing the outcome of the project.
And which project was that again?
The Bozeman Municipal Watershed Project.
Okay.
Correct.
The one that, okay. Mm-hmm. And so is that moving forward now?
Yes, we have been able to move forward, which is excellent. I've been able to go up and see some of the work happening firsthand, and it looks wonderful. There is still some litigation continuing, but at least the injunctions
have
been
lifted. Does it appear that it'll be completed?
Sorry, would you mind please repeating that question?
Yeah. Does it appear the project will get completed? I mean, are you optimistic at this point?
At this point, I am optimistic. Yes, the Forest Service is very committed to seeing that through.
Dr. Barrett, I'm going to close here. You had three points that you were making, and number two, you were talking about public official or having a commission, I think, something like that. And did I hear it accurately that it would be public officials that would serve on this commission that you highlighted in item number two?
I highlighted two potential programs that are being proposed in the commission recommendations. One was a community wildfire risk reduction program, which is explicitly called out in Westerman's drafted legislation. And then additionally, a proposed fire environment center. So if that's the one that you are referencing.
That's the, yes.
Correct, yes. So this is an interagency joint office with shared governance structure, but with one dedicated director who would be responsible for the budget, the hiring, and the administration. It would be an interoperable data sharing and technology platform.
Okay. Well, would there be private actors that would be allowed on this also?
I would believe that they would be part of that larger governing board.
Okay. Because I was just wondering if I was hearing that there would not be private actors that would be allowed there also. So they're not excluded.
No, correct.
Okay. And on point number three, you talked about additional resources needed, additional money being needed. So I have a great skepticism about that. I mean, you're hearing some of the back and forth that we're having, that we allocated significantly more money, billions of dollars or more money, to do a variety of things in regards to this natural resources issues that we have before us, including wildfire, and yet we're not hearing more. You heard from the U.S. Forest Service official that they're actually not getting more work done, and so that's really a concern. Is the answer just money?
The answer is partly money, certainly. We do need additional financial incentives and investment and subsidies, particularly to communities, to be able to do the mitigation measures needed for structures, neighborhoods, and their larger community in reflection and complementary to what is occurring on the wildlands around them. So certainly money is part of it, but it goes beyond just money. As articulated in the Community Wildfire Risk Reduction Program that is part of this bill, there are additional functions that are required, including technical assistance for expertise that goes beyond what traditional federal land management agencies are responsible. There is also a need for financial incentives, for subsidies, for research and risk assessments, for building code adoption, for support for land use planning, and to support local collaborations on the ground between public and private partners.
So something that would be really helpful is if you could identify a source of money that's already existing. I mean, we sit here as a nation in $34 trillion in debt, and it's the original reason why I ran for our state legislature years ago was because of the fiscal problems that we had, and of course they're even more severe at the federal level. I think it's really irresponsible for us to put new money in, and if you can find existing pots of money that may be out there that we could access to be able to accomplish some of those goals. I know certainly on this side of the aisle, I think you're going to find a greater receptivity to what you're proposing, and would be really helpful for us to be able to advance the goals that you have laid out.
So, thank you, Chairman.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Mr. Sauber, you got 5 minutes. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's called pay fors.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy to see a great Minnesotan on our panel today, and I thank all of you for being here. Mr. Palmer, thank you for coming to Washington and testifying on behalf of Minnesota's forestry sector. We really appreciate it. I'm happy to hear you discuss the Good Neighbor Authority in your testimony. As I shared, I've seen this program work incredibly well in northern Minnesota. That's all the reason more that we need to expand it for tribes and counties. Can you expand or share more on this?
Yes, Good Neighbor Authority just gives us more opportunity to get more acres treated in the national forest. We have multiple tribes and counties already have forestry programs that do timber sales, set up timber, do the administration of it. So it would just give more opportunities. As we heard earlier, one of the things the Forest Service is they're short on people. This would give more people, more boots on the ground to get opportunities and get things done.
It's a win-win-win.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about the provisions allowing direct sales on priority fire sheds?
Sure. So that was set up in 1976, if I remember right. And what's happened is it was never changed with all the inflation we've had since 1976. It was never changed. The amount was kept the same. By just fixing that, just getting it up to date on what it should be at, the minimum, the value of the timber, it would help out with a lot of small logging businesses that are hurting right now. They would love to have that opportunity. It would help to get more acres treated and actually help in a lot of you, even out west, where they could get opportunities to do projects that are too small for a lot of people, but be perfect for some of these other businesses.
Mm-hmm. You know, while our forests in Minnesota do face the risk of wildfires, we luckily do not face as large of a threat as certain states out west. That said, forest management is still incredibly important. Can you speak to the importance of proper management of forests in Minnesota and similar areas of the upper Midwest?
Sure. You know, and we talk about the East not being as fire-prone, but as Mr. Tiffany will tell us too, on Saturday, we had over 300 fires in the state of Wisconsin alone. So it's not just out west. It's also out east. So getting more management done, getting more forest fire-resistant is important for all of us. And there's definitely opportunity there to get it done before we lose it.
Do you, Mr. Parma, in that first panel, the Forest Service Chief, I talked about allowing the private industry to have some input in conversation. Do you feel that you have a voice as a private industry with the Forest Service, or would you like them to at least have a heavier voice? Would you like to have a heavier and a more influential voice because you are the boots on the ground?
I guess as far as voice goes, I mean, we're heard at the table for sure. Sometimes I wonder if it goes in one ear and out the other, but that happens. But I think the opportunity is actually, we have a lot of opportunity to get things done on the ground, and we have tools that we've given them. The GNA is one, stewardship, there's designated by prescription, designated by description, opportunities where they don't need to do a lot of the work on the ground. We can get that done with just things that we already do in industry already.
Yeah. Do you think they're listening? I mean, that was my premise of my question to the Forest Service Chief. We have private industries and experts in the private sector that can help you make decisions. And that's the goal, to make sure that the Forest Service works with the private industries so their voices are heard, not just listened to, but actual action taken after you've given the input from your perspective of boots on the ground, the industry experts, and I consider you an industry expert. So, Mr. Parma, thank you for coming and representing the great state of Minnesota. To the other witnesses, thanks for your testimony. And again, Mr. Chair, it's called to pay for, and I yield back.
Will the gentleman yield?
I will yield.
So, Ms. Downey, do you see reason for optimism? I think I've been in this place for 4 years, become much more familiar with the Western wildfires and what's going on. Do you see reason for optimism that we're going to do a better job as a country for what really has been a disaster going on for the last 10 to 20 years?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. And I think where I see optimism is that there is now broad support and recognition for the need to actually apply these tools and to do active restoration work through mechanical thinning and prescribed burns and management on the ground. So that is where I do have optimism. I think in order to be able to then harness that enthusiasm and make it more easily applied on the ground through a lot of the reforms that we're talking about today, through limiting disruptive litigation, through accelerating the rate at which things are able to move through the environmental review process, at bringing in the private partners and states and counties and tribes, that is where then we can take that enthusiasm and that broad buy-in and recognition that we need to do something and turn that into outcomes on the ground. So I guess my optimism sort of hinges on our ability to make some of these reforms and to harness that enthusiasm.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I yield back.
Gentlemen yields. I'd like to thank all of our witnesses for joining us here today. Many of you traveled from long distances. Appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate the members for their questioning. Members of the subcommittee may have some additional questions for our witnesses today, and we will ask that they respond to these in writing. Under Committee Rule 3, members of the subcommittee must submit questions to the subcommittee clerk by 5 p.m. on Monday, April 22nd, 2024. The hearing record will be held open for 10 business days for those responses. If there is no further business, without objection, Subcommittee on Federal Lands stands adjourned.